Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska!
Is that the full poop?
And nothing but the poop.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, June 8, 2022, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. Day 507 of the Biden-Harris administration, 149 days until the 22 midterms. I'm on Instagram. My handle is TheBobSeska, Twitter, BobSeska_go. And the last time Charles Johnson from Little Green Footballs was on this show, my God, Donald Trump was still president. But today, after 2 years, we correct all of that with Charles's triumphant return to the show. Chances are you follow him on Twitter or you've been to his website, littlegreenfootballs.com. Charles is one of the good guys for sure. So today we're going to get caught up with the 1-6 investigation, what might happen with gun control, whether the Democrats have the fighting spirit they need to win some elections this year, and a whole lot more. Maybe some conversation about Glenn Greenwald in there too. And we'll make sure it's not another 2 years before Charles returns again. Meantime, if you like what you hear today, please help support this show by subscribing to our bonus content at patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. All right, let's get caught up with the great Charles Johnson.
More fun, more music, the Bob Seska Show.
Well, you know what? This is absolutely fucking ridiculous, Charles. It's been 2 years. I looked it up today. It's been 2 years since the last time you were on this show. I have no idea why it's taken so long to get you back on the show, but my God, we've got lots of territory to cover today.
Yeah, time flies when you're having no fun at all, I guess.
So where are you on the hope scale? One being least hopeful for meaningful gun control legislation and 10 being most hopeful. I don't think you're anywhere near 10.
I'm about at zero, to be honest.
Zero, really?
I really don't. Yeah, I just don't think it's going to happen. Let's face it. We just don't have the votes to pass anything in the Senate. And the Republican Party is utterly opposed to any kind of gun legislation. You know, they're making noises right now, you know, to try to fool people again. But that's all it is, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, they're just running out the clock is what they're doing. They're saying that exactly. They're going to maybe come up with some sort of compromise thing. Mitch McConnell put John Cornyn in charge of negotiating with the Democrats. But no matter what they introduce, whether it's bipartisan or not, they're not going to get 10 Republicans to break the filibuster, are they?
No, no way. And, you know, I mean, Mitch McConnell has done this many times before. You know, he makes noises like he's going to do some kind of bipartisan deal. And then when push comes to shove, you know, he votes it down. He tells his people to vote no on everything. In fact, you know, I just read something that said he sent out a memo telling them yesterday not to vote.
Yeah, right. I think the House Republicans in particular have been told not to vote for any legislation that gets introduced down there. I know that the House Democrats are introducing an assault weapons ban. So that was never in a million years going to get Republican votes. So in an awful way, it kind of makes sense. But on the Senate side, they're at least pretending, but the pretending isn't going to lead anywhere legislatively. Nothing's going to get passed there.
I really wish I didn't feel so pessimistic about it. You know,
me too.
I don't like feeling pessimistic, but I just can't see it happening, you know, based on the last 20 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, it's been the Charlie Brown kicking the football thing. I hate to overuse that metaphor, but that's kind of what it is. Every time there's a gigantic, heart-wrenching mass shooting in this country, there's always this discussion in the wake of it. Well, maybe now the Republicans will be shaken out of their support for the NRA and the gun lobby, and they'll do something that's somewhat meaningful. But it never works out that way, does it?
No, it's never going to happen. I mean, you know, the bottom line, I think, is that Republicans benefit politically from mass shootings. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty cynical view, I guess, but that's what I think is going on. They're deliberately using them politically. If they really gave a shit about the kids or the teachers or the people in churches who were killed or you know, or anyone who was a victim of gun violence, they would have taken action long ago.
Yeah, I get the sense what they do is they use it to incite their supporters to actually buy more guns. And that's what we saw. That's what we saw in the wake of Sandy Hook. I mean, in fact, after every mass shooting, there is a spike in gun sales. That happens every single time. And, you know, I noticed that Steve Scalise today was repeating the "we didn't ban airplanes after 9/11 gibberish.
Ugh, and that argument drives me nuts. It's so dishonest, and they know it's dishonest.
Well, it works with the poorly educated Trump voters, doesn't it? That's the point, right?
Right. Well, people who have no logic skills just can't think to the next step and realize that airplanes actually do something useful for people.
That's right.
Besides kill them.
Yeah.
And they do the same thing with cars and with, you know, anything that might occasionally harm someone but also has a good use. They'll bring it up in response to gun legislation, and it's never honest.
So the absurdity about this Steve Scalise line of attack is that if we play out his example, then maybe what we should do is suspend all gun sales after a mass shooting, just the way we suspended all flights, grounded all flights after 9/11, right?
Maybe. Yeah, that's a good point. But, you know, that isn't going to happen either. I mean, really, they just don't want to do anything. Let's face it.
Yeah.
But they want the shootings to continue. I really believe that at this point, you know.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they would have done something. I keep coming back to that, you know. And if you really feel for the people who are being murdered, you take action. And they're the ones who can do it. We can't. You know, I can't take action to stop it.
Right. And all of their solutions involve selling more firearms, don't they? If we're talking about arming teachers, if we're talking about arming administrators, if we're talking about adding security guards and police to school campuses, then you're talking about more gun sales. That's what it all boils down to, doesn't it? They just want to figure out a way. Yeah, exactly. To sell more firearms for their overlords in the gun lobby.
It really does seem like that's part of it. And it's also the political benefit. Again, you know, coming back to that, they get a big political boost from these kind of things, you know, especially from the really dumbass followers. Mm-hmm. You know, and I hate to put a whole class of people in that, but there they are. You know, there's the people who honestly just go out and buy every gun they possibly can. And, you know, did you see that thread that was on Twitter that somebody posted with like picture after picture of all these people posing with dozens and dozens of guns?
Yeah. And my question, whenever I see something like that, I can't help but to think that the Second Amendment wasn't ratified as part of the Bill of Rights in order to protect someone's collecting hobby. You know what I mean?
No.
Because that's a hobby. What they're doing with those firearms, that's not a stockpile. That's not an arsenal. That's a collecting hobby. We like to collect guns is what they're saying. And look at our amazing collection. It's like baseball cards or action figures or Beanie Babies. Right.
Well, it's also boasting about their wealth because, you know, guns are not cheap, especially assault weapons like an AR-15. They're very expensive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When you see a guy with like 45 guns laying out by a swimming pool, you know,
yeah,
that's probably $100,000 worth of hobby right there.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
crazy.
And just going back to what we were saying about the dumb shits that buy arguments like Steve Scalise's 9/11 comparison and airplanes.
Right.
I imagine this is kind of in your wheelhouse. I don't know if you saw this theory floating around about how some social media people, and I refuse, I'll say it in the context of saying that I don't like the word influencer. So, but you know what I mean? Social media people figured out that if they deliberately include mistakes in their YouTube videos or their social media posts, it actually helps their reach. So I wonder if stupid shit like this, not only is it designed for the poorly educated Trump voters, but it also kind of extends the reach of those tweets. So, for example, the video of Steve Scalise saying this is going viral right now on Twitter. And I imagine it's partly because a bunch of us are going, oh, you stupid fucking idiot. But it's helping the reach of it, right? Isn't it?
That's true. But then also the dumb shits hear it and they go, he's one of us.
You know? Right.
You know, and these Republican politicians know this, and a lot of them play stupid all the time. You know,
yeah, they do.
Of course, some of them actually are. But you know, I think a lot of them are playing dumb. You know, guys like Steve Scalise, he's probably not a really dumb guy. He plays one really well.
Well, speaking of dumb guys who are regarded
Gohmert.
As... we'll get to, you know what, we're going to get to Gohmert in just a second. But dumb guys...
Sorry, I'm the guy who yells Gohmert. Anytime someone brings it up.
And I've got you all teed up for that. But as far as dumb guys who are regarded as smarter than they really are, Glenn Greenwald is already on this. Gunman who appeared outside Brett Kavanaugh's house, I believe, wanting to assassinate Brett Kavanaugh. He's like, and so Greenwald said that Joy Reid on MSNBC should be held accountable for inciting this guy. So there's the Glenn Greenwald we've known for at least a dozen years, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't know. He blocked me years ago, so I... You know, and for a while I was using a little trick I have to, you know, which is known as logging out to read his tweets anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just stopped doing it because it's so depressing. I mean, the guy is such a vicious, you know, he literally is vicious toward anyone who criticizes him even slightly. And it's tiring to read.
Yeah. And he's doing a great job right now of trolling everyone with his constant appearances on Tucker Carlson. I mean, this was all something that I think you and I and several others were predicting all along.
Yeah.
That Glenn Greenwald is only out for Glenn Greenwald and whatever his personal agenda happens to be that week. He has no interest in truth or reality, does he?
Well, I mean, he's pretty much proven that now. And I'm actually kind of gratified to see so many people catching on to what a weasel the guy is.
I know. It's taken them long enough, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I mean, he did a good job of playing to the left's biases for a while there, you know, and a lot of people gained respect for him for the way he wrote about George Bush and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But which is understandable, but you know, I really think all of that was an act.
There's nothing on the level about Glenn Greenwald. I mean, one of the great examples is the fact that he would sue people or he would engage in lawsuits, represent lawsuits, and instead of actually pursuing the lawsuit, all he would really do is spend the other side to death by overwhelming them with discovery and paperwork until they were just bled to their last dollar and couldn't continue anymore. And then that's when he would swoop in, right? And so that's always been his tactic. It's never acting on the level.
Well, you know, when I criticized him, one of the things he did from behind a block, you know, he had already blocked me on Twitter, but from behind the block, he tried to link me to the Norway? Anders Breivik, the mass murderer. I think it was Norway.
Yeah.
It's one of those Scandinavian countries. I always get them mixed up. But he tried to link me to that guy and say that I inspired him, which is the exact opposite of the truth.
Wow.
You know, because what would happen if you actually read Breivik's manifesto, you'd find that he did not like me at all. He published a long screed by this guy named Fjordman saying how I was wrongfully attacking all these anti-jihad bloggers and, you know, trying to link them to Nazis. And he was all upset about it. And this is what was actually in his manifesto. But Greenwald tried to say that I had inspired this guy, which is absolutely false. To me, that's like one of the lowest things I've ever heard of someone doing. Yeah. Certainly one of the lowest things anyone's ever done to me, to try to link me to a mass murderer of children. No, fuck that guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how I feel about Glenn Greenwald.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm so glad to see, as you were saying, I'm so glad to see more and more people agreeing with that point of view. But as I said, it's taken long enough. I mean, I think we both lost followers on Twitter, certainly liberal followers on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
When we were attacking him during the Snowden thing. And we've talked about that many times in the past. And I'm glad to see even that is kind of being publicly relitigated as far as whether that was on the level, whether that was part of the entire menu of Russian attacks against the United States. And so we now see this in a clearer light. Thank God. That
has anyone heard from Snowden since the
funny invasion? You should ask. No, the answer is no. He's kept his mouth shut throughout this entire Ukraine thing. He was saying a couple of things early on. I think during the run-up to the actual invasion when Putin was amassing his troops on the border. But since the actual invasion began, Snowden hasn't said a goddamn thing. Now, that might be because of, I don't know, restrictions on internet in Russia, or it's most likely, though. I mean, let's call this for what it is. It's most likely, though, Edward Snowden not wanting to piss off his paymaster and protector, right, Vladimir Putin.
Yeah. Oh, I just checked. Actually, there's something he posted just yesterday.
Oh, now I look like an idiot. What did he say?
No. He hadn't been on. He hadn't been on since May 18th.
Okay. And well,
then,
that makes sense.
Then there's a couple of posts a few days ago, and then one yesterday, but nothing of substance.
Nothing about Russia. Nothing about Ukraine.
No.
Of course not. See, all right. Then that, I feel vindicated now because, I don't think he's going to comment on Vladimir Putin.
The last thing he posted is, every day this site has people just absolutely volcanic over something that will never matter. See you tomorrow.
Wow. You know,
figure
I thought
out what that means.
I thought we were skeptical and disillusioned. He's just like, hey, nothing matters here. So I'm out. Bye.
He's in a place where nothing matters, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, everyone's talking about Matthew McConaughey's press conference at the White House yesterday. What'd you think what'd you think of all that?
Oh, it was pretty extraordinary to watch. Yeah. I mean, the guy's he's a great actor.
Yeah.
You know, he knows how to put it across. You know, I do wish that he'd been a little stronger about what he was recommending. You know, I mean, because he never actually said he wanted an assault weapons ban or anything like that. It was powerful, but I would have liked to hear something about, you know, let's do this.
Yeah, I think he was there in more of a capacity to talk to non-political people. I mean, that's how I'm kind of reading it. And maybe I'm seeing this through my own bias, because my position on all of this has been congressional legislation is a non-starter, as you were saying. I think we agree on that, where we can try. I mean, I think it's worthwhile to at least try to pass something. But ultimately, the makeup of the Senate's not going to allow that to pass.
Yeah.
But so that being said, I think the best way to tackle this problem with Congress off the table is to pursue it culturally, to go after the gun culture itself. In other words, go after the demand for guns. This notion that it's a, you know, they're weapons that are tough and cool and cinematic, and they're sacrosanct because they're in the Bill of Rights and all of this crap, right, and sort of start to pick away at that culturally among people who aren't necessarily engaged in our daily political back and forth. So I think in that sense, Matthew McConaughey's speech spoke to those people and spoke to that broader effort beyond legislation. So in that regard, I
think that's
really
a good point. Yeah.
That
really is a good point. You know, I just, I, even though we can't do anything in Congress about this, I still think we should be trying constantly. I mean, if nothing else, if you go back and look at how the Republicans dealt with the Benghazi incident, How many hearings did they have over that? I mean, what was it? Did it end up being 15 or 18 or something?
Oh, yeah. It was a ridiculous number of investigations. Yeah, it was like two dozen.
They just kept doing it over and over and over. And that's what Democrats need to learn how to do. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not going to win, you just get out there and you do it. And just the act of doing it inspires the base, you know. But when you don't do it, the base sees that too. And they don't feel like, you know, anything's going to happen. So, you know, to me, that's one of the big problems with the Democrats right now. You know, assuming that you're defeated before you're really defeated.
That's true. And I think the lesson that can be learned from the Republicans is that they have this relentless juggernaut style approach to these things. And what Democrats sometimes do is we talk ourselves out of doing that before it ever actually starts. And that's kind of a major difference between the two political factions in this country. I think people crave toughness even over political ideology, even over policy making. I think what generally, and when I talk in general terms like this, I'm not necessarily talking about those of us who are partisans and on Twitter 24/7. I'm talking about the regular people who don't follow politics on a daily basis and how they perceive what happens in Washington, what happens legislatively. And I think what they like is they like the toughness. They like saying, well, this is what's right and this is what we're going to pursue and we're not going to let up until we get some sort of satisfaction here. And I think that's the lesson that we can take away from the Republicans, if anything.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, I don't want Democrats to be Republicans. That's, obvious. I don't want that. But they do. They have some methods that are successful and Democrats can learn from that. And, you know, I always get a lot of pushback when I post things like this on Twitter and criticize Democrats. But the way I look at it is, I can't affect Republicans. Or people who watch Fox News, they're not going to listen to me, but I could possibly affect Democrats because, they're going to listen to people that they perceive as their base. So if you're going to have any effect on the political process, it's important to criticize your own side if you see them doing something that you don't agree with. They're the ones you can affect. You can't affect the bad guys. They're not going to listen to you.
That's right. And I think it's also valuable to pay attention to ex-Republicans like you and like me. I was in our younger years, we were both Republican. We were identified as Republicans or conservative, however you want to label. But I think in that sense, we have an insight in terms of how people react to that style of politics and what's successful, what's not successful. There's that firsthand connection that I think sometimes gets taken for granted, where we say, well, if you were once a Republican, you can't be trusted, whether it happened, 2 years ago or whether it happened 25 years ago, or in my case, I don't know what I'm thinking back now. I'm doing the math in my head 35 years ago. It doesn't matter. I think there's lots of value to that, isn't there?
No, I think that's a good point because, the people who were involved in politics on the right wing side know exactly how things work over there, So it's a good idea to listen to them because they can give you advice that you're not going to get elsewhere. For me, a lot of people think I was a Republican my whole life and then switched to the Democrats, but that is not actually the case. Before 9/11, I was a straight Democrat all the way, voted Democrat every election for my entire life.
Yeah, you're a professional musician. There aren't many like hardcore conservative Republicans and professional musicians at the same time, right?
Right. But at the same time, I was not really that political. I really wasn't savvy politically. So when 9/11 happened, I was, I didn't have the correct distaste for the right that I should have. I was still kind of naive about those things, I think. And that's one reason why, I got associated with that viewpoint. And, but I think most people think that I was like that for my whole life. And it really wasn't like that. So, in a way, I was coming back to what I used to be when I walked away from the right.
But it was the radical extremism of the Tea Party that kind of shook you out of that, wasn't it? Or did it happen before
that? It was that. And it was also actually, it was kind of before that, because what happened was I saw the so-called, the bloggers who reacted to the 9/11 attacks, you know, and started covering radical Islam heavily, which is me pretty much. I saw a lot of the bloggers that I thought were reasonably rational people starting to hook up with outright fucking Nazis in Europe, parties that were literally descended from the Nazis. And I just couldn't take that. That was just wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where it really started for me, I think. But and at the same time, I became aware because I started posting a little bit about issues around science and creationism and climate change and that sort of stuff. And I discovered that a large number of the people who were following me were creationists, which really kind of surprised me. I had never had a lot of contact with that viewpoint, so I didn't realize how widespread it was on the right.
So you were kind of a national security conservative. You weren't necessarily a social conservative, or were you?
Yeah, definitely not. In fact, I was, you know, when I did express my views about things like abortion and that kind of stuff, people reacted very negatively to me because they expected me to be like them, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So-called pro-life, or, you know, which is not really pro-life, but... You know, and I really, what really got a lot of people pissed off was when I, you know, started making fun of creationists.
Because, I imagine that's a hornet's nest to dig into.
Oh, man. There were people flouncing out of my my comment sections daily. You know, I had like dozens of people leaving.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was really, you know, if I had been less... concerned about my own ability to sleep at night, I probably could have, you know, done a Glenn Greenwald and catered to that crowd, and I'd probably be a lot richer than I am right now, and I'm not rich, so I'd probably have a lot more money, you know, because that's really what that boils down to. That's a big gravy train.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, Stephanie Miller and I always talk about that, how it would be much more lucrative for us to go, you know, to sell out and become conservative talk radio hosts or something like that, because there's much more money floating around on that side. I mean, the scope, the sheer amount of cash flowing through the Red Hat Entertainment Complex, which you've been following for quite some time now, between Hoft and all those guys, the careers that it has built, the wealth that it has created for people like Ben Shapiro and Dan Bongino and Glenn Beck and all of the usual suspects is astonishing. I don't think we truly appreciate on the left how well financed that effort is, do we?
No, we don't, and we don't have an equivalent on the left either.
No,
you know, nobody's financing me.
Nope.
You know, so you know, it really comes down to that. But you know, in addition to the big money people who are behind a lot of people like Ben Shapiro and Jim Hoft, they also have these grifting operations that just constantly bilk their followers out of money. I mean, it's it's nonstop.
Well, Donald Trump is doing that right now. Donald Trump, I don't know if you're aware of this, Donald Trump is no longer doing free rallies. He's doing paid speaking engagements. All of these rallies.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. You have to actually pay to go in and see him. In fact, I think it's $9 to go and stand in the overflow area. So basically it's $9 to go and watch Donald Trump on TV with a bunch of other red hats, probably spreading COVID all over the place. And then I think it's something like, I want to say it's $4,900. That's $4,900 to go to the rally and to do a meet and greet afterwards with not Donald Trump himself, but Don Jr. So for $5,000, you don't even get Trump. You get his ridiculous, you know, Commander Cokehead.
Does you know, he at least share his Coke with you?
You know what? He has to. For that amount of money, it has to be just loaded with piles and piles of Tony Montana-sized mountains of cocaine.
Yeah, just dive in.
Yeah, but that's just the thing. That's the thing I can't get past, no matter how much insight we have in terms of how Republicans operate after having been Republicans at some point. Yeah. There's nothing to explain the degree of the flim-flam here. How many people? I mean, upward of... what, 74 million people conned by this? 74 million suckers conned by a professional flim-flam artist, Donald Trump, and the party.
Did you see how much money Alex Jones is pulling in through his site?
No, how much? What's
his
the latest
online store? It's like millions every month.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's a multimillionaire several times over. No amount. And plus, he's hiding all of his assets so that the Sandy Hook families can't get their hands on it. I think he's exploiting the bankruptcy system to do that. I think he's putting a bunch of cash into overseas accounts, disguising his assets from them. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't bad enough that he demonized them and used them as the springboard for all kinds of ridiculous conspiracy theories. But on top of that, he's now, you know, hiding his assets so they can't get the money that they're entitled to after this lawsuit or the series of lawsuits.
You know, it always amazes me that they do this stuff right out in the open, you know, right in front of everybody. Yeah, and nobody true. Ever, and they never lose any support.
Yeah.
I don't get it. You know, I could never be that willfully blind. You know, I just couldn't do it.
I think all they care about is owning the libs. I think the only thing they care about as far as their leadership goes, political leadership, their media leadership, all they care about is if those two factions are driving liberals nuts. And if that's the case, please keep going. Here, take all of my money while you're at it.
Yeah. What a miserable way to live.
No.
I mean, geez.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, if the pandemic was a disaster for your finances, maybe you were out of work for a period of time, you probably upped the balances on your credit cards to fill that gap. But if my guess is correct, you're paying the top allowable interest rate on that debt. So why not refinance your credit cards into one super low interest rate and save a ton of money every month? Here's exactly how you do that. With LightStream, you can roll your cards into one low payment at a fixed rate as low as 4.98% APR with autopay and excellent credit. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are zero fees in that process. And just for my listeners, you can apply right now and get a special interest rate discount to save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/sesca. That's lightstream.com/CESCA. Link in the description under this episode at bobsesca.com. Subject to credit approval, rates range from 4.98% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% auto pay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/sesca for more information.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Bob Seska! All-time favorites all day long!
You know, I'm sure you've seen these tweets from Republicans about the so-called border crisis, going back to the the dummy, poorly educated line of conversation.
Oh, yeah.
That where they accidentally compliment Biden's record on seizures at the border and
yeah,
so on.
Right. Yeah, the fentanyl seizures.
Yes. What the hell is that? How do you explain that?
180,000 pounds of fentanyl were confiscated by the Biden administration. Yeah. See how terrible he is. What?
What is going on? What is that? Is that, well, are they doing the deliberate stupid thing like I was talking about before, extending their reach by doing something that's deliberately erroneous?
That's part of it, but it's also, I had someone explain it to me once. They think that if you find 180,000 pounds, that means that at least twice that much managed to get through. So they're assuming that those numbers are only just a small portion of what's actually coming in, which probably is the case, but it's always the case.
If they're going to say there are many more pounds and pounds of fentanyl coming through the ports of entry and across the border than are being interdicted, then why not just say that? Why not just say, well, they stopped this much, but they let this much go by? But instead, they're not finishing the rest of the attack. Maybe that's it. I don't know what the hell they're doing.
I think they're playing both sides. You know, they know that some people will actually think to the next step and think, well, that means a whole lot more is getting through.
Yeah.
But then others will just take that at face value and not even think deeply enough to realize that it's a good thing to seize that many pounds of fentanyl. Well, I just think it's, wow, fentanyl, Biden, bad. That's it. That's the depth.
But I think the Democrats need to take those tweets and run with them. Do like a Hollywood movie commercial kind of thing with, you know, Roger Ebert says this and, you know, Rotten Tomatoes says that. And instead use those tweets and say, you know, Joe Biden's record at the border. Here's Republican Chuck Grassley saying, oh, my God, a record amount of fentanyl was stopped at the border. Congratulations, Joe Biden. You know.
Yeah. We're back to this again. I wish they would do stuff like that all the time about every issue.
Yeah, you
know, but they don't.
I know. And we try to help, don't we? We try to get the suggestions out there.
But, and, you know, it's hard to do it because people will lash out at you on Twitter if you criticize Democrats. I mean, I've had people tell me, you know, there you go again with your criticizing. Why don't you just shut up? I've had people tell me to shut up. So, you know, that's how it is. And I understand it in a way because, you know, if you're really invested in this, you get personally offended if people criticize the party that you think is the good party. And they are the good party.
Yeah.
But they're not, you know, exempt from criticism.
I try to keep my mouth shut when it comes to really serious cuts against the Democrats, especially when we're leading up to a pretty serious election here. But at the same time, every once in a while, you got to just scratch your head and go, well, why aren't they doing this? And, you know, I talk to Cliff Schechter about this all the time. Cliff and I have worked in advertising with Democratic campaigns. And we have made all kinds of suggestions with regard to messaging, with regard to content, how to attack Republicans. And oftentimes we're met with, oh, well, that's too harsh. We can't go there. We can't get that mean about it or whatever the excuse happens to be. So it is something that we often run into when we're off Twitter, when we're off social media and we're just dealing with people one-on-one. There's something, and I don't know what it is. I'm trying to put my finger on it, Charles. Maybe there's polling that people like Chuck Schumer see, or the DNC sees this, and they see certain polling that says, oh, well, the public wants Democrats to reach across the aisle. The public wants Democrats to be the grown-ups in the room, so therefore they act that way. Or the public says that the Democrats shouldn't act like, you know, poop-flinging monkeys like the Republicans. There's some sort of polling that says, all right, you got to continue to be the serious party. And quite honestly, I'm happy for them to do that in normal times. But right now, the stakes are so high that we got to start throwing the gloves off. And I think, for example, maybe replacing Chuck Schumer. I mean, maybe in the 1990s, his style of politics worked. But we're in this culture war right now, and we need animals on our side to an extent.
Yeah.
People who aren't afraid to fight. Yeah.
And we just need people to be constantly doing things, you know. I mean, that's one of the things that people really respond to. Like when Beto O'Rourke got up in front of Abbott and his Dog and Pony Show.
Yeah.
I mean, that really resonated with people.
It was a hole in one. It was a home run, to use a couple of sports metaphors there. We all saw that and went, yeah, more like that. I don't know anyone who saw Beto O'Rourke interrupting that, whatever it was, that FAP fest after Uvalde with Dan Patrick and Greg Abbott and all those guys who all looked like they were going to form a posse in like Dust Bowl America, you know, and like,
and they were just lying about the whole thing.
They
told lie after lie about the police response, you know, and it eventually all came out. But, you know, when Beto O'Rourke got up there and yelled at them, like, well, he didn't yell. He was actually pretty calm. Mm-hmm. They were the ones who were yelling back at him. And that just made such an impact. I mean, I loved it. To me, I would like to see other Democrats doing that all the time. You know, but Bob, another thing that's going on right now, a lot of these people are not young, you know, and I'm not young either. but I do understand, you know, as you get older, you kind of tend to slow down a little bit, and you don't want to confront things quite the same way.
Yeah.
As you do when you're young, you know, and that's why you see people like Beto and AOC, you know, getting out there and pushing it, you know.
Yeah. Mallory McMorrow as well. She's another one who's, I think, stepped up in this void and shown some real guts, putting herself out there and saying what needs to be said directly and forcefully. And she can sell it. Beto can sell it, too. The problem is that when Chuck Schumer tries that, and again, I don't hate Chuck Schumer. I like Chuck Schumer. I'm just saying that he can't sell the toughness the way you see in some of these newer generations of Democrats. And that's, I think, part of the problem. Yeah.
No, there's a certain kind of drive that, you know, younger people have that it's difficult to maintain when you reach a certain age. You know? And I think we're seeing that in a lot of the older Democrats. Mm-hmm. You know, and Chuck Schumer saying he's not going to bring any legislation because, you know, it just isn't going to work. That's what he said recently. That just pissed me off so bad.
It's like,
that's utterly the wrong way to do it. I'm sorry, you know, and I don't mean to criticize the Democrats, but I have to. That's just, you got to keep doing things.
Yeah. And conversely, I've mentioned this on my show a few times recently. Nancy Pelosi, on the other hand, is doing a fine job. I think as far as toughness, my God, I mean, she's about ready to pass with the entire Democratic House caucus intact, voting for it, an assault weapons ban. She has managed to pass through the House of Representatives nearly everything on the progressive wish list, from police reform to climate crisis legislation, voting reform, the John Lewis Act. All of that stuff has been passed in the House of Representatives. And I think we would do well as Democratic voters to resoundingly reelect all of these Democrats who have done the right thing and who have followed the extremely strong leadership of Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi did a lot better than I expected, actually. You know, I mean, she's kind of risen to this this moment.
Yeah, yeah. She was peril. That's it. She was able to pivot from a certain era in politics, you know, which was maybe the 90s into the 2000s. I think she was first elected speaker in the beginning of 2007 after the 2006 watershed midterm election. And so she's seen a few generations of politics and has able to shift her politics, shift her posture based on the times. And I think that's worked out really well. See also the fact that she successfully impeached a sitting president twice. So that's there's something to be applauded about that alone, much less all the legislation.
And it also demonstrated just how completely corrupt the Republican Party is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But again, you know, how much effect does that have? You know, I mean, Democrats already know that. Republicans don't care. Right. So what happens?
Yeah,
you know, you
yeah.
can show that they're corrupt over and over and over, and it never has any effect.
So you may have noticed we have a couple of commercial breaks in our shows, like the one you're listening to right now. But here's the very best way to listen to the Bob Seska Show without all of those pesky commercials. Just go right now to our Patreon page at bobseskashow.com. Scroll down to the link for the ultimate edition of this podcast and sign up for just $15 per month. And you think, oh my God, that's a lot of money, Bob. But here's what you're going to get. In exchange for your generous support, we're going to give you a completely commercial-free version of the Tuesday and Thursday shows, and now the Wednesday show too. And the Shadow Docket, by the way, that's going to be included as part of the audio file. In other words, one mega show with the free portion and the Shadow Docket combined, exactly how it's recorded and no commercials. But wait, there's more things. You're also going to get the Friday After Party podcast with me and Kimberly Johnson included in that level of support, all for just $15 per month. So again, you get the Tuesday show, the Wednesday show, the Thursday show, commercial free. Plus you get the Shadow Docket. Plus you get the After Party podcast. You get everything we have to offer here on the show. Again, that's bobseskashow.com. Bookmark it, send it to all your friends, and we thank you.
Bob Seska plays more music.
I got to ask you about your guy. How has Louis Gohmert not choked on his own vomit? Yeah, how has he managed to sidestep that? I mean, the other day he said, if you're a Republican, you can't even lie to Congress or lie to an FBI agent. Or
oh, yeah, that was a great one.
They're coming after you. Yeah, yes, of course they are.
They're going to come after you if you lie to the FBI. My God.
Damn.
They're being persecuted again.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
This guy is, you know... He was a judge in Texas. You know that, right?
I know. Yeah, he was a judge, and I always question how he makes it to work every day without, you know, trading his car for some magic beans or something. You know what I mean?
He's one of those guys, you know, some of them are pretending to be dumb, but he's not pretending.
That's right. Yeah, John Kennedy, I notice on the Senate side, is one of the best of the pretenders. He is, yeah, that guy's stepping into it every day, but he steps into it deliberately. He knows what he's doing. You don't go to Oxford and then suddenly become like, you know, a Warner Brothers cartoon character. You know what I mean? It just doesn't happen. He's well educated.
Sometimes it takes a really smart guy to play pretend he's really dumb, you know?
Right, right. So
you either have to be really dumb or smart enough to play dumb.
Well, do you plan to watch the 1-6 committee hearings starting tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. I'll be watching. You know, I will.
Yeah, yeah. Well, repeating my question from earlier, where are you on the hope scale for some sort of prosecution of Donald Trump to come out of all of this? I mean, maybe not just the 1-6 committee, but the cooperation between the 1-6 committee and the DOJ and all of these different investigations. I mean, what are the odds of Trump facing...
I'm hopeful, you know, in a sense that I'm not really hopeful.
You're hopeful compared to no hope at all.
Let's see. That's a good way to put it.
Okay.
I guess, you know, I really would like it if we came to the end of this hearing, however long it's going to go, and they announced the prosecution of Donald Trump. That would be great. But, you know, I'm not expecting it, but I hope I'm surprised.
Well, I want to say it's already underway. I want to say the Department of Justice is already investigating Trump, and that I think we got one of our best indications last week. And of course, it was kind of steamrolled by other news cycles. But last week, Peter Navarro was subpoenaed by a grand jury in D.C., for documentation, not only his testimony, but also documentation of communication between him and Donald Trump. So whatever this grand jury in D.C. is doing, they're absolutely investigating the Oval Office, people who had direct access to Donald Trump during his presidency. So I see that as a very hopeful sign.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do.
I'm trying, Charles. I'm trying to get a little bit of hope for this side of things.
I'm hoping to be hopeful. Yeah.
There you go.
But it really is kind of difficult after a year and a half of what looks like nothing. And Donald Trump still walking around, still spreading sedition.
Yeah.
Guys like Steve Bannon every day on his podcast, you know, and he's driving the Republican Party's agenda right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, with all of these infiltrations into local assemblies and local controllers and people who oversee elections. You know, I mean, he's literally pushing the country toward fascism mm-hmm. every day. And yeah. and to me, that's just not a healthy way for a country to behave, to let people walk around and do this. You know, they should have been stopped. I'm going to be radical and say Donald Trump should have been charged immediately after January 6th.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it was so fucking obvious. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did it right out in front of the whole world.
And, you know, we're coming up on the equivalent period of time in which Nixon finally resigned after Watergate. It was about 2 years from the break-in to yeah. Nixon's resignation. So I always use that as sort of a yardstick to determine
yeah.
where we are in this investigation. We're coming up on 2 years, although the dynamics are slightly different insofar as we have an executive branch of the opposite party now doing the investigating. Right. And so maybe in that respect, and I'm trying to give them some slack here. In that yeah, respect, maybe they're taking their time. Yeah,
I've thought about that too, you know, and it does seem like it's... If you go by the Watergate prosecution, yeah, it's really not that unusual. But on the other hand, what is unusual are the seriousness of the crimes here.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, I mean, this is so much worse than Watergate. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably the most horrific crime that's ever happened in the American experiment, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and Donald Trump is a historically horrible president. I mean, literally, he oversaw the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people while he stood by and did nothing.
Yeah, we should not allow ourselves to be gaslit on this front. And I think that's part yeah. of the news media effort. I think that's part of the Republican effort to make mm-hmm. us feel like this. Oh, he was great. He was normal. He was a normal president. And we're all going, well, wait a second. No, that wasn't what we observed. There was nothing normal yeah. about that. And the insurrection, one of the darkest chapters in American history. You put that up right alongside the assassination of presidents.
Definitely.
Just these terrible events in American history. You can go back down the line, and this was absolutely one of them. This I would put this in the same category as something like 9/11, as far as it's what it says about the United States, what it says about our politics here.
It was
an awful, awful thing, and you hope that there would be swifter retribution for the people who orchestrated it, the architects of all of it, which we all know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why, given all of this time that we've had with Donald Trump in public view, why anyone continues to give him the benefit of the doubt. Anything that comes along, as far as I'm concerned, if I see something come down and say, well, Donald Trump may have done this, I go, well, yes, of course he has, until he proves to me that he didn't.
Yes.
And until that point, I'm going to assume he's done the very, very worst.
That's the default position.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's a lot worse than we know.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that very deeply, you know, that if it ever comes out the full depth of his crimes, you know, we're going to be just absolutely horrified, even yeah, more yeah. than we already are.
Oh, I know.
I think this guy is a historically, you know, evil person, honestly.
The thing that I can't shake, and this is probably right along with your hopelessness, I'm having a hard time shaking just a general disillusionment with my fellow American voter. And what I'm observing is the very real potential for more NRA-backed pro-Trump Republicans getting elected this year, knowing what we know about the gun lobby, knowing what we know about mass shootings, knowing what we know about Trump's crimes and the insurrection and the Republican cover-up of a massive election fraud conspiracy culminating in that insurrection, knowing all of this, American voters are going to walk into, and I'm not saying enough to make a majority. I'm not predicting the outcome of the election by saying this. I'm just saying more voters are going to go in and elect more Republicans because gas prices are temporarily high, because things are costing a little more temporarily, and it's all going to correct itself given enough time, probably in the case of gas prices, probably before the November election. But people are still going to make this immensely immature and selfish choice, knowing those stakes, gun massacres, support by the gun lobby for Republicans, all of it, go down the list, reproductive rights and rolling back voting rights and so on and so on. I'm having a hard time contending with all of that. I don't know how you perceive all of this, Charles.
I think you're right, man. The bottom line with the American public generally, they don't pay attention to politics.
No.
I mean, I see this all the time. It's really kind of rare to have a person who knows what's really going on or even is aware of current events. You know, I guarantee if you went out there and just talked to a random person in a shopping mall and asked them, what do you think of the Supreme Court's Roe versus Wade draft decision? Mm-hmm. They won't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, I know.
I mean, most people just don't pay attention to politics until it's time to vote. And then maybe they'll vote. And if they vote, it's kind of a crapshoot. I think a lot of people just go into the voting booth and just kind of pull the lever for whoever they feel like at the moment.
And, you know, we've taken some time here to crap on some Democrats. But I will say this for the Democrats, whoever decided, and going back to Matthew McConaughey here for a second, whoever decided to bring him in and comment on what happened in Uvalde and all of his remarks in the press room regarding that, whoever chose to do that, whoever's idea it was to do it, was like next level genius, because what that does is it cuts through and speaks to the very people you're talking about, the people who aren't necessarily engaged. I would wager, I haven't checked TMZ today, but I would wager that Matthew McConaughey press conference is up on TMZ. People are following that who don't normally look in on political debates, don't look in on political news or video clips and so on. They're seeing that, and it's breaking through that pop culture politics barrier, the barrier between those two things. And that is super important, isn't it?
I agree, totally. You know, that was a good move, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, whoever did that should do more of it.
100%. You know, I think it's more of a rumor than anything else, but I don't know if you have additional insight. I heard that your nemesis, Chuck C. Johnson, is now going around telling people he's a progressive, and some people who ought to know better are actually believing him. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. No, it is true. Well, I don't know if I'm not sure he's really saying he's a progressive, but he did say that he voted for Joe Biden and that he's donated money to AOC.
Well, I think that about says it all, right?
But he did. He actually did. I looked it up on the election.
How much did he donate to AOC?
The minimum, I think, was $250. You know.
Okay. Well, that's an investment in his social media brand or his rebranding or whatever the fuck deception he's trying to carry out.
But at the same time, if you go and read, you know, he's up on Substack, right?
Oh, of course he is. Thanks, Substack.
Yeah.
The only website that allows him on their website now, right?
Yeah.
It's the last
bastion. He's up there, and if you go read what he's written recently, you'll find out that he hasn't changed at all, man. It's just like blatant anti-Semitism, conspiracy theories, all kinds of craziness.
Wow. God, I know people by name who swear that he is entirely on the level, that he's a progressive now. I mean,
no.
The anti-Semitism alone, I can't believe they're getting snowed with that in mind.
Oh, I've seen this online. I you know, there was a guy who actually interviewed him for a podcast. I can't remember the guy's, I think his name was Zev something.
Zev Shalev, Zev Shalev. That's the one. Yeah, Kimberly knows him, yeah.
And he apparently has bought the whole line of bullshit.
Yeah, I think that's the guy. That's the name I was thinking of when I brought this up. Yeah.
To me, it's horrible after following Chuck Johnson for so long that anyone would be you know, susceptible to his bullshit. The guy's a Holocaust denier, for God's sake.
Yeah. I don't understand it. I don't understand the susceptibility we have. Maybe it's something that's always been there, and because of social media, because of the prevalence of the internet and video and things like that, that we see it more often. But God, I just feel like we've become a nation of suckers who are way too easily led down the road by some really unsavory, I mean, obviously unsavory people.
Yeah, you know, I see it all the time. There's actually a whole group of people who are right now trying to rehabilitate Chuck Johnson. I have a Twitter search that I use just to check on what's being said about him, and I see this stuff. You know, I see people saying, you know, he's really changed now. He's, you know, he's a left winger now. He's, you know, he's in favor of AOC and Joe Biden, and you know.
Well, I don't get it,
man. How gullible can you be?
What are they getting in return for aggrandizing this obvious fraud? I don't understand. Charles.
It's weird. I don't know, man. Maybe he's paying them or something.
That's one thought that I had. I mean, I have no evidence of anything like that, but you have to start questioning. Yeah, yeah.
But you have to wonder, because it's so completely off the wall, you know. But, you know, he did make some money from that Gawker suit.
He did?
He's actually changed the amount that he says he got several times now. Now he's up to like $1 million. I don't think he got $1 million, but he definitely did get some money out of that settlement.
Am I misremembering? Isn't he one of the first guys to start using defamation lawsuits as kind of an online political weapon? Am I mistaking him for James O'Keefe or something?
No, he was a kind of an early an early adopter of that technique. He threatened to sue me at least a dozen times.
Wow. And never did? He never sued you?
No, never did. Never did. And he said, well, I checked, and you don't have anything worth suing for anyway. So, you know.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I had the Heartland Institute threaten to sue me once.
Why was that? What happened there?
It was over a climate change post. I think there was a big incident a few years back where Peter Gleick had gotten access to some internal Heartland Institute documents that showed that they were, you know, doing some dishonest bullshit, which is what they do.
Yeah.
And I had posted about it on my blog, and they had a lawyer write me a whole letter, and, you know, came to my home address.
Yeah.
And you know, they threatened to sue me unless I pulled it down. And I went and talked to a lawyer too.
Yeah.
And he was salivating at the prospect of of taking them on. You know, but I just did nothing. I just said, fuck you. I'm not changing anything. I'm not pulling it down. See you later.
It seems like for a while there, it was looking like that was going to be a new weapon in the political debate. Like that was going to be happening to, you know, those of us who have public platforms and a certain number of followers on social media and so on, that eventually on a long enough timeline, we would all be sued by a conservative or whoever because of something we've said on Twitter or in a blog post or in a podcast, that is now the purview. That's the arena where political debates will end in a courtroom with a judge after a frivolous lawsuit, a slap suit in this case is specifically what we're talking about, slap suit.
So, well, they're hoping, you know, since Donald Trump installed so many conservatives in judge positions, you know, I mean, maybe they're thinking they have a better chance of winning now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Donald Trump is a strong believer in lawsuits. I mean, that's what he does. I mean,
absolutely.
He's like James O'Keefe and Glenn Greenwald combined. I mean, he's like both of those guys. He's like a chimera of those two, which is horrifying.
O'Keefe is not doing bad with his suit against the New York Times.
No, which is upsetting. Yeah.
Yeah, it is, you know, and I'm not a big fan of the New York Times either, but, you know, still.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, you don't want somebody like James O'Keefe to win a suit.
Well, again, it's weaponizing the legal system to silence media, and that's the entire intent. And we know this because of his website. O'Keefe's got an entire, like, wall of shame on his website where he's got all the scalps of the different people who he threatened to sue and who also ended up taking down what they said about James O'Keefe. He's basically scrubbing the internet of anything negative about his videos, and he's using lawsuits in order to do it. The threat, or at least the threat of a lawsuit.
Yeah, you know, I think he's the legal move, the legal branch of the fascist movement right now. And there's definitely that's part of what's going on. You know, it's a whole multi-pronged effort. You know, you got the foot soldiers, like the people who blog and get on Twitter and harass liberals. And then you have the upper class guys who can afford to sue people.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have the politicians who are lying like crazy. And then you have the Proud Boys who are like the enforcers.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
the thug squad.
Right. And before we wrap up, I want to ask you about this. The other day you tweeted, we kind of missed the opportunity to reshape America into a better place, didn't we? And that was something that really resonated with me because I kind of agree with you. There have been many mileposts in our history where the tangent of the space-time continuum could have gone to a good place, and instead we use that milestone to exploit people or to restrict people's liberty and so on. 9/11 is a big example of that. I think
we pull back from the opportunity and don't take advantage of it.
Is that kind of what you meant? What did you? What was your line of thinking?
Well, I was thinking about all those other times that this has been the case, but specifically at that moment, I was thinking about the fact that when Joe Biden came into office, it looked like he was going to really make some huge changes in the way America did things.
I see.
You know, that whole Build Back Better bill and all that stuff that he was trying to get through, it looked like things were really going to change. And then none of it happened.
Yeah.
Or, well, not none of it. You know, to be precise, he did get some things done, absolutely, but not the big stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's because the Republican Party stood in the way of it, as usual.
I think it also, a little bit of the blame, and this is controversial of me to say it, every time I do say it, I get some pushback from our own side, but we didn't deliver the numbers in the Senate. We came up to the line and stopped short right there. And we could have had a much more significant watershed moment in our politics where we could have passed quite a few things if we had actually put the full effort into some of the down ballot races. And I'm talking about, obviously the United States Senate, but going down the ballot even further, state legislatures, where all of this terrible big lie bills are getting passed, all of the terrible restrictions on reproductive rights are getting passed. On down the line, it's state and local elections where all of this is going down, primarily the state elections. And so I don't know what it is necessarily about the Democratic mindset, the liberal mindset that prevents us from paying attention to things that happen below the presidential, category on the ballot.
Yeah, it just gets back to that thing I was saying, you know, where most people just don't pay attention to politics, you know, and voting is kind of an afterthought even with them, you know, they're just not paying attention. But the right, on the other hand, is able to motivate their base much more effectively, I think.
Yeah.
And they're doing it now.
Yeah. Well, it's really easy.
It right now.
It's really easy when you can dupe them with things like, if you're a Republican, you can't even lie to Congress or they're coming after you. So there's an advantage to that. There's an advantage to having an audience that's that gullible. You know what I mean?
True. Yeah.
So absolutely. Is there anything that you're hopeful about, Charles? Is there anything that we can kind of say, Charles Johnson says that we should be hopeful about this one thing. So let's do it. Is that a
boy? You're throwing me a stumper there, Bob.
I was about to say, throwing you a curveball at the very end, right?
Hopeful, huh?
It seemed like you were a little bit hopeful for something coming out of the insurrection investigations and so on, right?
excuse me. Yeah, I am.
I thought the cough was like, no, sorry, Bob.
No, hopeful, no. God. No, actually, I do hope so.
Yeah.
I hope I'll be surprised is what it amounts to, because I don't expect it. But I hope something comes out of it. I'd like to see some What I really want to see is Donald Trump being prosecuted, you know,
because
he deserves it more than anyone I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to throw in something hopeful here. Keep an eye on Fani Willis, because not only is she going after Donald Trump in Fulton County, but she's also going after Lindsey Graham. We found out about that last week. And I've got my fingers crossed about this grand jury in D.C. that's already subpoenaed to Peter Navarro. So, you know, we'll see. Yeah. Well, the website is littlegreenfootballs.com. As always, you can follow Charles at green_footballs on Twitter. I've got links in the description for all of that under this episode at bobsesca.com. Charles, I promise it won't be another 2 years before I have you back.
Okay, I'm going to hold you to that.
All right, you got it. Thanks so much, my friend. Appreciate it. Take care.
Yeah. Mahalo.
Bye-bye.
Let me tell you a story.